Previously on Lost.
You cannot change anything. You can't. Even if you try to, it wouldn't work.
Why not?
Whatever happened.
Do you really think all this is an accident? That we, a group of strangers, survived? Many of us with just superficial injuries? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason. All of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Horse?
You know Morse code.
You gotta find me, John. You gotta find me. And when you do, you'll find him.
Who?
Jacob.
Two players. Two sides. One is light. One is dark.
We have to go back!
We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost rewatch podcast for Season 5, Episode 9, Namaste. I have a question. What song from 1977 or earlier do you play at your Dharma orientation? My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I'm playing Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult because this seems like a cult, and I might die.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and on that theme, I would pick Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees, which came out in 1977, because, yeah, I love when they arrive and they're like, oh yeah, there's some don't worry about it, it's fine, it's fine, you'll be fine. Stay alive, as the Bee Gees say.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I'm playing Give Up the Funk by Parliament off the album Mothership Connection, which came out in 1976, so it would exist, I believe, mostly because I think I would enjoy living in the Dharma Initiative in the 1970s, and I would be the best, like, funkiest dude at the party. I'm just saying.
Neil's like, I don't know what Rosinski's doing, but check out this castle I made out of tongue depressors.
Right?
It would be fantastic. Welcome to another episode of the Storm of Lost Rewatch podcast. If this is your first time joining us, hello. This podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us or visiting the island for the very first time. Why? Because each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. The first is a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes and avoids all spoilers. That section was harder when you're in like season one or two, but now we're closer to the end. The second section is called The Storm. It's a storm of spoilers discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. You might think, because of that thing I said about the calm, that maybe the storm's getting shorter. It's not. There's lots of stuff to talk about in The Storm. You know what I'm talking about if you've seen all of Lost. If you haven't and want to navigate the spoilers, you could look down at your podcasting device and see time codes where each of those sections will occur. You will notice that you still have a couple of minutes before we start the calm. Why? Because I'm going to tell you how to support this show. Besides just listening, thank you for doing that. You go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you can subscribe to support us on a monthly basis, and in return, you get bonus content. You get bonus podcasts. You get access to our Slack. In the Slack, we have lots of activities, including an upcoming book club, which is going to be on Zoom March 7th, I see here, and Chen Pop, which is Joanna Robinson talking to Dave Chen. He is one of the previous six Daves and has lots of thoughts about pop culture. Joanna, how's Chen Pop doing?
Thanks so much for throwing to me with Chen Pop, because we are currently not recording any, so I have nothing to talk to you about. But the book club is...
Oh, the notes lied to me! a Ben Linus notes!
But the book club is a big thing. We're doing that. This is our first Zoom version of the book club. So Passing is the book we're reading. We're meeting on March 7th. A new experimental thing we're trying. You see our faces with each other's faces. All right. So what else is going on? Obviously, like, there's a lot you could do in our Slack. We talk about it every week. You can watch the next episode of Lost with Dave on Saturday. We're going to be watching He's Are You, which is a Saeed episode, which means I need to delete our Saeed Slack bot for a Saeed episode. You can email us, hostatstormpodcast.com. You can go to our website, stormpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter, @stormpodcast. And so we've got a couple reviews and we've got a few emails in, but only a very few emails, and it has to do with the reviews. So let me explain. First of all, we have a 5-star review. Love the pod from Jay Lucis. Neil, the opening of this review says, please let Neil pick the accent for this. Neil.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
That's a tough, I don't know if I want that kind of power.
Great.
Throw her a Texan. That yeah. seems pretty safe.
In honor of Texas being 100% open for COVID.
What is, Neil, what does a Texas accent sound like?
There's actually a bunch of them.
Yeah.
So it's tough because you like, have people of, I mean, you're going to start with your y'alls.
Uh-huh.
You're going to start drawing some things out.
Drawing some y'alls. All right. Love the yeah, podcast, just, but I'm a Patreon member.
You try and just keep it as calm as possible.
Calm with the y'all and the draw. All right. Love the pod. I'm a Patreon member. It's worth every penny. Literally watch Arrow to understand how they did use the pit to heal Oliver. Thanks to Dave. But need more spoiler section time. It's one thing with Thrones, but Lost started when I was in elementary school. Like the original run, my rewatch had me hating the time jump in half season. That's it. Okay. So, Jay Lucis, we will try to bring you more Storm, and maybe more Storm will help you understand why the time jumping season is the best season. Okay.
That accent reminded me of a guy I saw in the Footloose musical who played the hick cowboy who learned how to dance. Very good. I appreciate it.
Wait, I enjoyed Miles it very Teller? Much.
Oh, I mean, I saw it in Vegas. I don't know if that what cast that
you
was.
You saw
I didn't,
but Footloose in Vegas?
Yeah.
It's like
in
the
Vegas.
Most intricate onion
that's
in the history of the
Yahtzee.
World.
Yahtzee. All right. This review is 2 stars. You guys are awesome, but ... I don't want to hear another person's email read out loud to me ever. Please stop this. I find myself skipping through most of the show now. If you want every now and then summarize a lovely or smart email for conversation's sake, fine. But seriously, I can't imagine anyone likes hearing this many emails read out loud every week. I truly hate to be such a bummer. I love you guys, but this is ruining the pod for me. Okay. So I think that there is a good point in there, which is that I've gotten a little lazy in – here's the problem. You guys do write incredibly good emails, and then I get – I feel not – well equipped to decide what should stay in and what should go out. So let's make it a partnership, an agreement. I will try to be better about only reading select bits if you all listening can try to keep your emails a little shorter. And together,
we need you to tighten it up.
Together, I think we can get where we need to go.
Or just leave us a TLDR at the end of your email.
Actually, we got that in one of our emails this week. They're like, if you want to read this part, it's fine. So to that end, we only have a few emails this week. And honestly, we only got a few emails this week. But all right, so I'm going to start with the first one, which it starts with a prompt from me to you. Dave, how do you say the name of the airline that brought the Losties to the island in the first place?
Oceanic?
Neil, how do you say the name of the airline that brought the Losties to the island in the first place?
I say Oceanic.
Okay, I'm not sure which one I say, but John wrote in telling us that it is Oceanic, not Oceanic. So I guess that's for Dave. I wasn't sure who that email was for. I thought it was maybe for me, but it seems like it's maybe for Dave. So
Oceanic.
Oceanic. Well, I always say it's ocean, right? It's an ocean.
Yeah. Well, I thought maybe that was like the British way to pronounce it. I was like looking it up. I was like, because I thought it was about me. And I was like, do I do this?
Oh, no. This is 100% me. If for you guys, if you haven't been listening to us since, like, I don't know, Joanna and I on Republic City Dispatch, here's the thing. When I'm writing, I'm talking to myself. And so in order to do that, I often pronounce words in my own head to help me spell them. So Oceanic, that's how you spell it. I'll try to do better while talking. I mean, that's the problem with being me and then turning into a podcaster. And I thought I would never talk in front of people.
I do that sometimes with words too. I pronounce them a certain way because it helps me spell them correctly. All right.
But feel free also to ping me when you hear me do it, because I'm going to try my best, but I will fail because this happens to me all the time.
All right. And then John has another question. It's not really a Lost related question. Basically, what TV, film, world / characters do you most want to hang around constantly? John says for him, it's Lost, Harry Potter, and Lord of the Rings. He says he's a huge Star Wars fan, but he doesn't want to be in the Star Wars universe. So what are our world's shows / movies? I'll start and I'll just say for me, it is also Lord of the Rings. I want to hang out with the Fellowship all day, every day. I want to live in Hobbiton. I want to sing with dwarves. That's definitely it for me. It's my comfort fantasy world. Dave, do you have an answer?
Yeah, mine comes from the collective dream we had with no author, where there's a wizarding school where there are 2 weeks during Christmas where everybody leaves and you get just hang out in the magical wizarding school. That's my place.
And Neil?
I mean, there's so many good answers. I don't know. I think at the moment, I really would live on the Lost Island. It really does sound fun and, you know, free.
not frozen, pretty virus free.
Right. It seems to escape the pandemic as far as I can tell. So, I'll just stick with the Lost Island. I don't have any complicated answers for this one.
All right. This email comes from Luke, and this is also a question for Dave, and that seems to be a theme this week. So Luke says, hello, greatest podcast hosts ever. Thank you. Number two here. Number one. Luke has a question, and this is, I know the answer to this. It goes way back, though. So Luke says, forgive me if this has been covered already, but I recently saw Dave tweet my email subject line, which is Lost with like a 2 instead of the S, better than reboot, about preferring a Lost sequel to a Lost reboot. And I was wondering if that's something y'all could expand on as a group in the Storm section. Oh, okay, maybe we can revisit this, but I think actually there's like a, I don't know. I'm used to Dave talking about secret backdoor Lost sequel. So Dave, where does that come from? And maybe we can explore it more in the Storm.
I think it would be a great idea in the world of surprising television to do an entire season of a show that's sort of a mystery show, and at the end of the first season being like, it's Lost 2, because you've already like hooked people into the concept, and then we could just be off with an island of mystery. And would it have to involve the island? Maybe. And I think the Storm part of the discussion is maybe where we could talk about some specifics, because Neil has also been keeping some track of our Lost 2 errant discussion. But yeah, I would rather do that than like reboot it. Like, you've got all the backstory, you've got the basic rules set up. Just like fix some of the rules you think are broken, and I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, I definitely think you would want to do it in the current universe. Sequel, prequel, I don't know. What is time?
Yeah, especially on Lost, or Lost with the, but the 2 is a S.
Yeah.
All right. This last email in the comm section comes from Melissa, who did give me a TLDR section in her email, which wasn't even that long to begin with, but thank you for that.
Nice.
And she says, why is the island not named? Hydra Island has a name. In Namaste, Sun calls the island the main island, and Ben calls it our island, but wouldn't it have an official name, especially if Hydra Island has a name? I'm not sure why, but this is a current mystery I cannot let go of. Thoughts?
I have one.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
You're familiar with Prince, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Prince was once called Prince, and then eventually he was just he's like the artist formerly known as Prince. He was Symbol. He was just the artist for a while. This, what we're experiencing, is the island's period of just being known as the island. So it may have had a name a long time ago, but we're never going to find out. And or we have not yet found out. And it's just the island.
The island formerly known as Jacob's Ladder.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Neil's answer, except I think it's more like a reverent secret society sort of thing. It's like if people are just talking about the island, you either know the island or you don't know the island, mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Get hip to the island.
Real ones know when you say the island what you mean.
They're not talking about Japan. They're not talking about New Zealand. They're talking about the island. Yeah. We might be talking about New Zealand.
All right, one last thing from Melissa who says at the end of the email here that she plans to join the Patreon when she's on maternity leave in July. And then she says, not falling down hack, be pregnant or carry a small child around. I'm fairly clumsy, but due to child growing and rearing, have only fallen once in December 2019, and ice was a factor. Since Dave set the goal back in 2018, a real accomplishment, I assure you. Thank you for attainable resolution I never knew I needed. So there you go.
Yes, that's fantastic. Being responsible for a life really makes you up your game.
So that's all of our emails, and the column was so swift. So that leads me to ask you, Neil, what happened on Lost this week?
Oh, quite a few things happened. This episode, Namaste, was directed by Jack Bender and written by Paul Zbyszewski and Brian K. Vaughn. This episode aired on March 18th, 2009, and it takes place entirely on or above the island. In the air above the Pacific Ocean, we witnessed the crash landing of a JIRA Flight 316 on Hydra Island, thanks to the heroic piloting of handsome Frank Lapidus. The co-pilot doesn't survive, but many people do, including Sun and Ben. Frank is a hero. 30 years earlier, we watch as LaFleur puts a plan together to sneak Kate, Jack, and Hurley into the Dharma Initiative, while Jim and Juliet add some names to the Dharmaville class of 77. Jin heads to the flame for information that will help him find Sun, or at least he hopes. He is met with a bunch of attitude from Radzinski and is unable to find any evidence of the plane, but they do find another survivor when Saeed comes running out of the jungle. After getting Jack assigned to janitorial duty, head of security James LaFleur heads to the flame to interrogate Saeed and place him under Dharma arrest to keep him safe, which all works out fine because they are both, and I can't stress this enough, very good. Sawyer is so good that later on he takes time away from his book to serve Jack a heaping helping of truth, and the truth is that Jack is no longer in charge here. Back in 2007, Sun knocks out Ben with a wooden oar and takes off for the main island in search of Jin. Frank tags along for moral support, and because more Frank is never a bad thing. Their journey includes a conversation with Christian Shepherd and the revelation that Jin and the other Flight 815ers are stuck in the 1970s. The whole thing ends with a 13-year-old Benjamin Linus forgetting to put mustard on Saeed's Dharma jail sandwich. Boom. Lost. Fun fact about this one, part of the clothing that Sawyer gives to his friend, Sawyer gives Hurley a University of Georgia Bulldogs sweatshirt to wear to his Dharma Initiative orientation. The fun fact here is that Josh Holloway himself attended the University of Georgia. This week's column question, without looking it up and with your status in the Dharma Initiative on the line, who was the president in 1977, Dave?
Pre-Gipper.
Sure.
Not Nixon. So
I don't think
Ford.
So.
Ford.
Okay, Dave says Gerald Ford. Joanna?
I think isn't it Crisis of Confidence, Jimmy Carter?
Oh, God.
Joanna says Jimmy Carter.
Now that she says
president
it, makes me
feel 1977 survey says Jimmy Carter. Wait, oh, there were two of them. I guess it was an election year. So it could have been either Jimmy Carter or Gerald Ford.
Ah!
A reality where we're both right? That's so fun.
More island magic. That's amazing.
Thank God.
Namaste, I think you mean.
We're not being asked about presidents before 1950 because I would have been screwed.
Yeah, they were all just guess FDR, as far as I can tell. Yeah. He was right after Lincoln. It was easy.
We have another episode.
Did you
where
say he's the one after Lincoln?
Yeah.
Lincoln, FDR. No. Okay, we are back on the island. We are only on the island. Once again, we were only on the island last week. We're still on the island here, but we're split into two different time periods, which sort of have a very direct connection to each other this week instead of a thematic one. But I think we're going to stick with our present day timeline, Losties, for now, and kind of talk about where we pick this episode up, because once again, we're on the Ajira flight, and Ben Linus is conscious. So I believe last episode we said that we were on day one of the island again. I think we were lying to keep you unspoiled, and that was actually day two on the island. If we go by lights and darks.
Some of us were lying because we forgot.
I mean, that's also always
same
an
diff.
Option.
Same diff. But basically, this takes place basically right there, two time periods we're dealing with. One is 2008?
2007.
2007,
it's
sorry.
It's like 30 years, yeah.
2007. Oh, yeah, 30 years ago. Right. Okay, 2007, which is like the Hydra Island stuff / Son and Frank's adventure. And then there's...
Trash Dharmaville.
And then there's 1977, so...
Untrash Dharmaville.
Those are the two. I had a question. Can I ask, like, can I hop ahead and ask a quick question about that? Because sure. I haven't bothered to check. I just thought I'd throw this question in there. Emily Vandervoort said in her recap that she thought it was weird that there was all that Dharma stuff in the, like, trashed barracks, because her memory was that the others had, like, purged the barracks of all the Dharma stuff. But there was still, like, a welcome sign and stuff like that. Like, what is all that Dharma stuff doing, trashed or no, in the place where the others had been living for several decades? So Emily's theory was that this is an alternative future. And maybe someone had in the past changed something.
Interesting.
Oh.
It's just something I've never thought about.
So. Yeah, it's kind of a fun one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's either, yes, we're in an alternate future, and that's important. Two, someone's placed those things there because they're important. Or three,
someone who can also hold torches despite being non-corporeal.
Yeah, and, you know,
I'm looking at Christian Shepherd here.
Yeah, maybe manifest things that, you know, aren't really there. Who knows? Or three, the good old, they made the decision for 1 hour of storytelling and accidentally made an anachronism, a la Charlotte's Age being kind of out of whack, depending on what episode you're paying attention to. So I think
Ethan's age also. But let's, let's not worry about it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think it's like a little goof they did to like make it more eerie. But I had just like it literally never caught that. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe when I said that they weren't very connected except for the direct connection with the photos, I was being a little bit glib, because I don't remember watching these episodes so much real time about how quickly I grokked the different time periods and that they didn't land, you know, a Jira on a Hydra island in 1977. I guess I just always assumed they didn't because it was less weird for people not to time travel. So I just always assumed they were on a similar island. But I think here, this episode is supposed to erase all of your doubt, both with showing you both time periods of Dharmaville and the return of the runway, the mysterious runway on Hydra Island that they were building seemingly just to annoy Kate and Sawyer for slave labor. It is actually useful
right.
for the Sajira flight.
A reminder that, yeah, that when Kate and Sawyer were in the bear cages in season 3, they were breaking rocks to build a runway.
For no reason other than eventually a Jira flight
so
through.
So Frank Lapidus could be very good and land the plane. What was I going to say? And we all know why there are two different time periods, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, we can't make it that easy for Jen and Son.
Correct. That is why. That is 1,000% why. Gotta keep Son and Jin apart for a little while.
Also, the magnetism of Frank and the magnetism of Sawyer can't be that close in proximity on a linear scale. So that's why, I mean, that's why all this stuff happened in the first place, because they got too close with the handsome.
Too hot, too much charm.
And now they're in different time periods. And once again, Sun and Jin are paying the price for it. I don't like it. As always.
So Frank manages to bring us down on our runway. Our co-pilot gets speared by a tree branch. Unfortunate. And then Frank goes into the back, and the rest of the crew, who has been not flashed backwards in time, regains consciousness. We once again touch base with Caesar and Alana. Alana notices that Saeed is gone, so there answers that question from last week about where was Saeed. He is part of Team 1977 and time traveled back. They managed to get off the plane, and Ben, recognizing exactly where they are, wants to leave the island, while Caesar wants to investigate the other Hydra buildings. We know Ben doesn't care about it because he's lived there for a period of time. He wants to get back to the main island and manages to... Sun seemingly goes with him, but Sun, of course, has learned not to trust Ben and whacks him with an oar, leaving him in the state we found him at the end of last episode, being looked down at by a resurrected John Locke.
Yeah, so I think the point you started to make earlier is that this sequence happens before John Locke shows back up.
Right.
Yeah, and so like last time when Alana was saying, you know, the pilot and some lady took a boat.
Right.
That's Sun and Lapidus, and we see it here. And they roll back over to Dharmaville see some rustling in the trees before they run to Dharma Town. And that made me think, did Frank never saw the monster, right?
He definitely heard about the monster from Kimi's guys.
Yes.
So he's aware of the monster. I don't know if you ever had firsthand, you know, we'd have to ask the monster.
Yeah. But like Sun was on the beach. Definitely episode one is aware of the clickety clacketing and the ability to put trees down. So she, you know, gives him the side eye to the maybe an animal thing. But Sun and us, the audience, definitely supposed to recognize monsters still around. Maybe it just like keeps hanging around Dharmaville after it gets like released, because we return to Dharmaville post thrashing by monster, and inside one of those houses is a dry Christian Shepherd. I feel like I'm covering a lot, but also I feel like this is a very linear plot that is just trying to take us to the island, to this interaction, to the cliffhanger that they still have a long journey to go, and what the heck does that mean, considering it's in time and backwards?
Yeah, I mean, it's all just to tell Sun that Jin's in 1977. The whole... I mean, and then obviously
the most mystery-boxy way.
Yeah, Christian, you make it weird along the way with old Christian Shepherd.
You gotta make it weird if you're Christian. This is the second Christian appearance in...
This is the second Christian experience.
This is second Christian appearance that has some sort of association with the smoke monster, we should say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you're keeping track at home.
This is also like the second Christian appearance where he seems to just know what has happened in all periods of time. Because, mm-hmm. like, as we mentioned before, when he appeared to Locke underneath the ground, there wasn't even a well there. There was a whole statue instead of just a four-toed foot. So that was a long time ago, and he still was like, "Tell my son I say hi, and you're gonna have to die." So there's sort of like weird consciousness that Christian seems to be having. Maybe it is the Jacob force.
Can I go back to something that happens in this Ben, Son,
yes,
Frank thing?
Please do. I plot summarized, but hit anything along the way.
I want to talk to Neil actually about this. So this mm-hmm. is a Jack Bender episode, but it has a visual flair to it that we haven't seen before from Jack or from Lost, which is this like lens flare moment when Ben's going through the jungle and Sun's following him, and then he circles back behind her. You know, it felt like a visual flourish similar to like what we discussed last week when the camera was sort of circling the group at the table in LaFleur,
mm-hmm.
of like Lost trying to get a little like artier with its shots. And I was just wondering if the One Perfect Shot guy had any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing more camera movement, which I like. I like the following shots. I mean, the lens flare thing, this was what, 2009? So yeah, this was sort of the height of the J.J. Abrams lens flare thing, like when Star Trek was coming out. So that might even be a little homage to J.J. But yeah, and I think we're getting some more disorienting stuff. You know, like I think sort of those tight following shots through the jungle are a little more disorienting, especially when we don't know what time we're in. We don't know, you know, exactly what's left out there in the jungle at this point. So yeah, it's really good stuff. I mean, I think visually every season of Lost is better than the last in this, in some way. And this one is, they're really photographing the island in interesting ways.
Fun fact, this episode, which came out in March, came out just a couple months before J.J. Abrams' Star Trek movie. Not to say that like that was the first time J.J. ever used lens flare, but that's definitely the movie that like wedded J.J. and lens flare forever. But yeah, I was wondering that. I was like, is this an homage to J.J.? But I was just curious about the timeline of that, stuff like that.
Sure. I mean, maybe it was filmed after Jack Bender like went and visited the set of Star Trek to hang out with JJ.
And he's just like, saw JJ sitting there with a pocket mirror, waving it at the camera. And he's like, I can do that.
And he's like, all right, JJ, thanks for inviting me. I'm going to toss a lens flare into season 5 for you.
Just for you.
All right, so we're in the crazy cabin with Christian Shepherd, and it's all dusty.
Dark sun.
And dark sun. Sun who just wants to find Jin and is willing to oar people in the back of the head. I mean, it's Ben. Maybe we don't know if she's willing to oar, like, Lapidus.
Yeah, listen, no one is giving Sun a hard time for what she did to Ben.
Yeah.
Even Ben is probably like, yeah, that's fine.
And then in the dark cabin with Sun, there's suddenly a woman in the darkness. Joanna, is Claire in the cabin with Christian Shepherd?
I don't know. There's a lady in the background. No, I mean, I don't think so. But there's a lady in the background behind Sun in one of the shots. And this is not just like, it was mentioned in a number of recaps that I read. And then Dave found footage of it. There's definitely a young blonde woman behind Sun in a shot in the Dharma barracks. A lot of people thought it might be Claire because where's Claire, right?
Yeah, she's with Christian, as far as we know.
As far as we know. So, you know, and we haven't seen her yet this season, etc. We don't think that's Claire, but that was a common question at the time, I guess I should say. What do we think, Dave? We think it's...
Oh, I think it is a person who was on set who did not realize they were not in frame.
Exactly.
Oh, they were in frame.
It's just wild that it made it in. But yeah, there's definitely, it's like the Starbucks cup of Lost here.
Yeah, nice. But if like Game of Thrones was set in current day, we'd be like, what, Daenerys has Starbucks and nobody, everyone else has regular coffee. So I feel like crew members in the background of Lost, it's good to be like, that's a crew member. So people aren't like, whoa, we saw Claire. Because there's a world, man, where people are going to hitch their wagon to we saw Claire in the cabin.
The thing that it reminds me most of, I was saying this before we started recording, is there was that theory in the Game of Thrones, I think it's the penultimate season. There was someone in the background of a Braavos shot that people were convinced was Cyril Farrell because
it was like the shoulder pads were just right.
Yeah, the hair, the Miltos hair was there. So I think it's just like that. Like, oh, Cyril Farrell alive and in Braavos? No, it's just a rando in the background. Is Claire in the Dharma barracks? Probably not. We think it's just a crew member. So
yeah. In the Lost sequel, we'll have a scene where that somebody flashes through time and they all of a sudden flash by Claire and Christian and Richard in like some random time sitting there in the jungle playing cards or something. It'll be great.
No, but also they should flash through time and be the person in the Dharma barracks behind Sun.
Oh, that's a good one. Write that down.
It was actually Sawyer. He went there after he saw Kate and Claire give birth. He flashed in the Dharma barracks and he was like, son of a and then he was gone. Can I mention a thing really quickly? I like that you're going chronologically and I'm not trying to like muddy the waters, but like, where is Claire is a question, right? Like, there's two people that we haven't checked in with that we don't know where they are. I think that's the sum total. It's Claire. Where's Claire? Mm-hmm. And where's Faraday? Right. Sawyer says this really cryptic thing about like oh, he was here, but he's not anymore. And you're like, oh, what? And
we currently know where he is, but we do know.
We saw him in the cold open.
We saw him in the cold open.
Yeah.
Of the season.
Yeah. But where is he now? Why is he not Daniel Workman? You know what I mean? So
he's white enough to go to the mainland is the answer in 1977.
I guess he's on the mainland. That's the answer, I guess.
Well, though, we were talking last week about, like, why I would stay on the island, and it's because, like, I don't, like, what part of 1977 America is attractive to me is Dave Gonzalez, you know, mid-30s.
Dude, man. I would stay on the island if I flashed to 2021.
Yeah. We've established that, Neil, that you don't want to be in the magical wizarding school we all dreamt up one night independently and can talk about.
Yeah, I see your point. Dan, he very much could go to the mainland.
Yeah. Or, you know, captured by the others or in
dead.
The looking glass station or dead. Well, but we saw him in the cold open. I guess Locke's also dead and he's back.
But we don't know when in the cold open that was. We know he was in the Dharma Initiative at some point.
Yes. He was all right. Oh, fair. Where's Faraday? We should probably keep an eye on that. Like we were keeping an eye on where's Saeed last week. Definitely our main cast that is credited is not all here. That's for sure. Speaking of our main cast, we've talked up in the current timeline through all the people that we like. So let's go to our new people and decide if we like them. Caesar and Alana. Caesar seems to try to take some charge, but unfortunately comes up against Ben his first day on the island. So seems a little bit yelly. Joanna, what do you think about Caesar?
Yeah, I wrote, is Caesar the new Jack? Which is just like not something the island needs right now. Yeah, imagine what if Jack had come up against Ben Linus's first day on the island? What would have happened there? Yeah, I don't know. Here's Caesar. I mean, it felt, you know, in a lot of ways, they were, of course, trying to invoke the pilot, not the least of which because we see an impaled pilot on the plane, literally, you know, so we're recalling the original crash. But, you know, new societies just have to keep reforming every time there's a new collection of meat socks. And so Caesar is making his bid here to be, like, in some kind of leadership role, right?
It would appear so. Mm-hmm. He wants to search those buildings, and he does not think that Frank is telling the whole truth about it not being named on the island, or an island not being on any maps because there are, you know, structures and things. Frank manages to not look creepy while shrugging this off. I think it's just his, like, rugged, I just landed a plane on an island look. But all of Frank's lines work for me kind of regardless of tone. I'm loving Second Island Frank Lupitas.
Oh, yeah.
Who's like, I'm here. Oh, yeah. I already know some of the rules, but let's do this again.
I love how quickly Frank is like, I'm going to bail on you guys, and I'm going to go with the magical island people that I met before, even though I don't trust most of them. I think Frank has sized up Caesar in that he thinks Caesar is capable of keeping everyone else alive while Frank leaves.
Yeah, it's like he's not going to, you know, send anybody. He's not going to be gooping anybody, I bet. I bet I could duck in and out for a couple of days.
Yeah, but I don't know about Caesar. I don't know about Alana. Alana might goop someone. That's how I feel.
Sure. Yeah. We, you know, TBD on Alana. But Caesar just seems like he's asking some reasonable questions at this point. Like, where are we?
Guys, where are we?
Good old Charlie question. All right, let's jump back in time to the people we love and the setting we love. It's the Dharma Initiative, 1977. Finally, Jack is back, and he has Kate, and he has Hurley, and surprise, Saeed also ended up in the jungle, but they did not find each other. So he has to be reintegrated in a different way. Neil, we get to see a little bit of more of normal life in the Dharma Initiative. In terms of our new Dharma characters, is there anybody that's super likable at this point? Like, I was all in favor of Amy, but now I learned that she's like Ethan's mother. So, I mean, feeling
less good about her. What did Amy do to Ethan? Amy and, well, Horace. I mean, yeah, I think we know what happened there. Yeah, I really like this orientation sequence. It's a good way to bring in what?
Well, I was also trying to figure out if I liked anyone in the Dharma Initiative, and I thought of someone I like.
It's a good way to reintegrate Dr. Chang, I think.
That's
the person
I like.
Yeah, Dr. he's Pierre charming.
Chang. I'm a fan.
He's kind of mad that Amy had to be out sick, but he also probably knew about the baby. So, Dr. Chang, let's lay off, okay? Let's let Amy sleep. And then, yeah, we get more of some of the people who sucked. Dharma Phil. Dharma Phil is insufferable. And I think no more insufferable than when they pull up with Saeed in the car and he's like, everybody stand back. We have a security situation. Oh, sit down, Dharma Phil. And then I think, who else do we meet? And I'm thinking of the orientation. I'm going to let Joanna talk about what happens when we get to the flame.
Trivia-wise, we do get to see Rosie in the background of the orientation scene. She was the person who brought the brownies last episode.
Rosie, and pot brownie queen. She's great. I like her.
According to that actress, she filmed a scene for this episode that didn't make it in. But I guess we could have like a Rosie spotting because apparently she's going to be around.
I would want a poem or a song or whatever that's just called Rosie Brings the Brownies. Something like that.
Oh, I would definitely write Rosie a song if I lived on the Dharma Island.
So, Joanna, there's another major Dharma player we've been leaving out. Chilling in Mikhail's old digs or future digs. Ugh. We have Rosinski.
All right, guys. Usually we try to play things coy. I'm just going to tell you right now. Rosinski's my least favorite character on Lost. Bar none.
Mm-hmm.
Like him less than Pickett in season 3 or whatever. Rosinski's just a character. Dharma Phil might be one of my least favorite characters, except Rosinski is there to make Dharma Phil look like super chill any day of the week. He's just so aggro and angry and shitty from the jump.
And paranoid.
And spoiler alert, we never get there's never a moment where I'm we saw stuff like let's take Baby Ben, right? We see Baby Ben's backstory in an earlier episode of Lost, and Roger Workman, his dad, is abusive to him. And we kind of understand why Roger Workman himself is abusive in the first place, because he's not properly processing his wife's death. Like, all of those like cycles of trauma and abuse and stuff like that help us understand those characters. Rosinski, who's not like a major character, so like it's okay, but like he's important. He's important to this season. And then he kills himself in the Swan Station at some point in the future. We know that because of exposition from, Inman.
Kelvin,
right?
Inman.
Yeah,
Kelvin.
Inman.
Wow.
Yeah. So Rosinski blows his brains out in the Swan Station, which is why it's sort of like, it's chilling that he's working actively on building the Swan Station, because that's where he will die. So he's building his own tomb, which is like, that's an interesting timey-wimey sort of dramatic tension thing that we know. And I'm inclined to be empathetic to characters who will take their own life. Like, I always am looking for to be very sympathetic to whatever pushed them there. But Rosinski, we never get anything very satisfying around that. And so he's just an irritant. And that, I just think he's badly written and actually badly performed. And I feel a little guilty saying that, but all the recaps I read also said that. They're like, this guy, I don't understand why he's making the acting choices he's making. So Rosinski and me, not a pair. We are not going to be kissed anytime soon.
He's also very easily fooled by the little play that comes out between Saeed and Sawyer, which I think is one of the great scenes of this season, is Saeed being interrogated by LaFleur. it's just this like masterful little dance that they're doing around Rosinski. Well, and you know what? Yeah. I love Rosinski getting fooled.
The one of our listeners in the live watch pointed out that this episode is like a classic farce, and it is, and that's like that's a moment of that, right? Like farce, you know, just all the moments where, like, when Miles sees the Losties, or like, you know what I mean? It's just sort of like it's all, or when Juliet swoops in to save Kate, or, you know, Jack seeing Pierre Chang for the first time. Like, there's just all these moments that are just like such a fun little, like, timey-wimey caper.
It's an incredible series of like near misses and almost caughts.
Yeah, exactly. And people putting on a show within the show for us, you know, so yeah.
So we have our new cast of characters. We have our four Losties coming back. And then, as you sort of already mentioned, Joanna, we got baby Ethan and baby Ben both here, which, let's not worry about the math right now. For storytelling purposes, they have shown up. So we know Ben obviously survives the purge because he, you know, causes the purge. And we know Ethan survives the purge. But now we have all these questionable characters whose fates are all up in the air. As, you know, Rosinski, not going to turn out well. Charlotte, apparently not caught in the purge, but on the island right now. And then, you know, we're gonna learn some history. We're gonna start filling in some fun history of what we know about the Dharma Initiative.
I mean, how does Ethan get, like, we know how Ben survives the purge. How does Ethan survive the purge? Fun question.
Didn't we decide that he was, like, at med school?
Oh, yeah. We talked about that in the storm, I think. We hadn't yet identified that the baby was Ethan. No, but the moment, I mean, like, shout out Elizabeth Mitchell, right? For the moment where Juliet is, like, holding this cute baby and then she finds out it's Ethan and she almost, like,
she has to, like, her face
it.
Has to, yeah.
She's you're just, like, you're oh, watching no. Juliet do the baby Hitler thing in real time.
Yeah. Oh. I've been faced with the problem.
Ethan.
It's like if you would around the corner and suddenly find like 27 duck-sized horses and be like, well, here's my fate. Come to see me once again. Speaking of Juliet, she's a team player but gets to do a lot of face acting in this episode because guess who's back? All of her problems.
All of her problems.
Well, Jack also back, but Jack at least takes Juliet opening the door to Sawyer's home much better, I think, than whatever's happening with Kate and Juliet and Sawyer. It's a whole bunch of weird looks to me. At this point, I think Phil has a better claim on being in love with Sawyer than Kate, but Joanna or Neil, is this working for anybody?
I bet you 100%. Phil has a crush on Jim LaFleur. I
mean, oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
All right, I'm going to be tracking. This is going to make Dharma Phil actually bearable for me. I'm going to be tracking Dharma Phil's crush on Jim LaFleur now.
Oh, the way he looks at Jack when Jack's like, which house is this LaFleur? And he's like, why would you even need to know that?
What do you need to spend time with Jim?
You don't need to spend time. You're just a workman.
Well, let's talk about Juliet really quickly. Let's just establish that Juliet is definitely the one who made the work assignments. So she's like, I mistook that for years, thinking that Sawyer had put Jack on janitorial duty, but finally realizing that Juliet's the one who does that. She puts Kate in the motor pool, like, I guess with her to,
with
I guess,
her.
Keep an eye
yeah.
on keep, her.
Yeah, enemies close.
And then she gives Hurley his favorite job, which is to, like, be in the kitchen. It's really fun. So I just like love that for Juliet. I don't love how threatened Juliet feels, though it's of course really understandable. And there's a lot. Here's why the love quadrangle works for me now in a way that it didn't before. I still don't love it, but it provokes more than just impatience in me. It provokes a real pang of anxiety and sorrow because we've seen what there is in the episode LaFleur. We've seen what there is at stake here. Like in the previous iterations, the triangle or the quadrangle, it's all sort of like a what if. Who would Kate be happier with? What would be the better match for Kate?
It's like a summer camp quadrangle that you had.
But this is like, there is something real on the line here. And it's what makes the tension of everything, because what is Jim fighting hardest to do. He wants to keep everyone safe. He wants to keep Saeed safe. He wants to keep Jack and Kate and Hurley safe. Like, he wants to keep them safe. But more than that, I would argue he does not want to blow his cover and ruin the life that he has built for himself. Yeah. And he has something tremendously precious to him at stake here. So, because, you know, otherwise he would have been like, oh, great, you guys are here. Let's just go. Let's go. Yeah. But he's not. He's like, let's go back and try to figure out how to make this work where you join the Dharma Initiative and we just stay here. Let's just stay here, guys. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah. And
Rosie
brings
the brownies. It's fine.
And I think there's definitely like a range of, you know, emotions that Juliet is dealing with. Yeah. But I do think there's this important moment where he said, where Sawyer says, as he's gathering clothes and they sit down to talk about it, you know, that he's like, you know, I need to protect them before they screw up everything we've built here.
Yeah.
And I think you can kind of see in that moment where Juliet's like, all right, well, let me think about, let me put aside the quadrangle and let's be helpful and let's keep our cover. And she, you're right. She does, not only that, but she's the one who thinks of the sub. She's the one who sort of comes up with the whole plan and ultimately saves them.
Oh, she's very good in this episode.
She's very good. Yeah.
Juliet's like, at this point, I've spent 6 years under two different governments of tyrannical white men in this compound. I've figured it out. I know all the gears.
Well, and then you can also, you can see it in the way that Josh Holloway says Kate, as he's recapping to her who exactly it is, came back. And she can see it. And I think there's this, like, this turn moment where Juliet's, you know, anxiety about the love quadrangle that we were all having anxiety about turns into, you know, let's just for now keep everybody safe. And if Sawyer's still calm, we can all be calm.
I have a people question, not a lost question.
Mm.
Or I guess a relationship question would be a better way to put it. Let's say you are Sawyer, right? And you say Kate and you know this might be a problem and you see the look on Juliet's face and you're like, oh, she also thinks this might be a problem. Which person should responsibly ask the other person, do we have a problem here? Or is that just like manifesting a problem off of a weird feeling that you have?
I feel like in the healthiest relationship, both of them should be able to feel comfortable saying something. But if I have to pick one or the other, I would say it would behoove James, who is currently not feeling insecure about his relationship, to extend the olive branch to his partner who is in a position where she feels insecure about their relationship.
Yeah, because he just told Horace last week that he's over Kate, so, like, walk your walk, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Or say that you might be having a problem, but you have to be the one that steps forward because you're the one.
Yeah, I mean, Sawyer's spot in a very healthy place right now, so it's up... It is kind of on him, especially with the way he like jumped out of bed and ran off into the
didn't tell her
to the North Point and didn't tell her. So now, yeah, he's got a little work to do to repair that, because I'd say Juliet's, if she's having anxiety over Kate's return, that's correct based on the extremely famous gif of Sawyer taking off his glasses. Yeah. I mean, Juliet wasn't there for that, but we all saw it. So.
The whole internet saw it, James. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think this episode's about doing a lot of that work for Sawyer. It's about him staying calm and, you know, getting their friends safe. And then also, I think that scene with Jack is super important, where Sawyer not only reestablishes with Jack, like, he establishes the stakes to Jack because, you know, Jack just fell out of a plane. You know, and I also think it makes clear to Jack that, like, this part of the quadrangle is closed.
It is. You know?
It's closed to Jack for sure.
I mean, it is just like, that scene is incredible.
Yeah.
I think a lot of scenes between Jack and Sawyer are good. The dynamic, the chest puffing dynamic got like a little tired, but it is reinvigorated by the power balance shifting so much. Here, and also Jack trying to be more of a man of faith than a man of science. Mm-hmm. He's not fully at ease in this role, but he's like,
Yeah, to his credit, he walks away.
He's like, all right. Yes.
I would say it's probably the best one since the scene in the jungle where Sawyer tells him that he met his father.
I agree.
He tells Jack, yeah.
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 Which that was what, season two?
Season one.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's season one, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that in terms of on the line of Jack trajectory, like, I like his character again, or at least the Jack that is on screen doing things. He's not doing things where I'm like, what, huh? Nah. Like, you know, his little smile, and he smiles, and he becomes a workman. He smiles, and he listens to Sawyer. He says his piece, and then he, you know, gets rejected, and he just walks off. Mm-hmm. I love
that it's not lost on Jack, the janitor joke.
Yes.
The Jack workman thing. It's great.
Maybe all of, like, maybe Phil and Rudzinski are just sucking up all the asshole energy in the room.
Well, they're like, we have these other characters who could be the assholes. We have a Caesar, we have a Phil, we have a Rudzinski. They're all going to yell before Jack yells.
Horace is still around somewhere.
But I think, or like earlier on in the podcast when, like, you know, we were at like season three Jack, who was making decisions about what was best for everybody from inside a prison, that it was like, you know, he does, there's a purpose of he comes out on the other side of this low point. And I think we're on the belt. He's not leading anybody yet, because Sawyer's, LaFleur, this is LaFleur's time. 1977 is LaFleur time.
It's LaFleur time to shine. Down here is our time. Yeah, I mean, and that dynamic flip, we see that similarly in the, like, Saeed Ben thing, right? That, like, Saeed's in captivity and Ben comes to visit him versus Saeed visiting a captive Ben in an earlier season. Do you know what I mean? They're interested in doing
Sawyer interrogating a captive Saeed, right, is what that happened in the first season flipped. Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of, like, it's like this island just keeps repeating weird different traumas.
It's like a record and it just spins around.
Ooh. Yeah. Was the original WandaVision just lost? Just trauma cycles? All right. These other two notes, I'm not exactly sure about. I know we have Hurley as our audience surrogate, which I'm going to say is Joanna, because she's been bringing that up when that happens, which is, we love our Jorge Garcia so much that we'll just believe what he says and empathize with what he says. And so they're going to lean into that. What was specifically came up this episode that you want to call
He's just asking in the ride back to, in the van ride back, where, as Neil said before we started recording, Jack is rocking his best look, I think, so far of the series, in the back of the van.
It's premium Jack, and honestly, it's up there with Kate's looks, too.
Oh, my God.
That 70s, like, Kate's braid. What is that, like a braided shirt and, like, her hair braided?
She looks so good.
They should have just stayed in the back of that van.
I do. Yeah. I agree. Hurley's just asking a bunch of questions. Like beyond the like what, which is what he says when
Sawyer tells him that it's 1977.
But then he's just like asking, he's like, wait, don't the Dharma Initiative die, like, you know, like all the sort of stuff like that. So I just think that it's a fun like, here, I'll read it. Okay, so Hurley goes, okay, so it's 1977 and you guys are all members of the Dharma Initiative. You do realize those dudes get wiped out, right? I saw where all the bodies got dumped. Well, aren't you going to warn them? Aren't you going to stop them from happening? Like, it's all these, like, audience surrogate stuff. And it's something that Jorge Garcia is so good at. Like, that could be clunky read by a different actor, but Jorge Garcia makes it work so well. And he and I said this in the live watch, but I'm thinking of introducing a new corner, which is like Miles and Hurley audience surrogate. Like, who's the better audience surrogate to see? Because Miles does similar things, not so much asking like exposition questions, but just sort of like snarkily commenting on things in a way that like the audience might. So that's all.
I really like them using Hurley as this tool and Miles as this tool this season. I think they do something else next season that is maybe taking it a step too far, but that's a tease for a couple weeks from now when we are in season 6. Finally, the sweatshirt line is relationship shorthand. This is the Georgia Tech sweatshirts, and he's like,
University of Georgia Bulldogs, before we get any emails.
Sorry, yes, University of Georgia Bulldogs. I apologize.
Yeah.
everywhere that has Bulldogs, very important. This is, you're saying it's a relationship shorthand, like, honey, where's my work?
Yeah, time? Like, ooh, they're at the sharing sweatshirts level.
She says it's in the wash. She knows where a sweatshirt is. Mm-hmm. Where's my sweatshirt? It's in the wash. It's just like we get so little because, you know, spoiler, we're not going to like go back through Sawyer and Juliet's relationship. So we get so little of the time leading up to this moment of their relationship. It's like, you know, him supporting her through that delivery thing, her, you know, them having smooching over dinner and this and like, you know, whatever else we get. But like, it's going to have to convince us that there's like all this history there. And I think it's a really clever, just like little subtle snuck in there moment. Honey, you know, where's my super suit? Like, you know, where's my sweatshirt? It's in the wash. Like, you know, I don't know. To me.
Yeah. She probably also has to remind him that his glasses are on his head. And he's like, where's my glasses? That's a classic.
They're on your head. That means it's time for corners. Neil, we have a Giacchino corner this week.
Yeah, this one, I really love this one. It's the track. This is the only new track for this episode, but it's played over the crash scene, and it is the monster's motif mixed with Frank's motif. Yes, Frank has a motif. And folks, this one has a banger of a name. It's called Crash and Yearn, which, I mean, if there is anything that is an all-time Frank Lapidus related thing, that's a good one.
The jungle of mystery moment for this week is Rosinski's model of the swan. Guys, you remember the hatch? You remember all the stuff in the hatch? You remember that Rosinski started painting that mural on the hatch and then he killed himself in the hatch? He's making the hatch. It's happening. The Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to Ben this week, who, after like season 4 happened and everybody realized how much we like to see Ben get hit, we've gone through a series of episodes, like every third episode, you see Ben get hit. They're lost in delivering exactly what you want.
Has everyone had a chance to hit Ben yet? I think that's something we should track. Who
we
gets
haven't
to
figured
hit
out
Ben?
Who hit Ben at the docks, but we have a very good guess, and I bet we get to see that eventually.
Baby Charlie.
Baby Charlie. accent corner, Joanna. I didn't even notice that we had one this week, but we do.
I mean, let's talk about Alana. This isn't the first week we've met her, but this is like sort of the most we've heard her talk. Alana, well, first of all, this is the first question. It's a more complicated accent corner. Where do you think Alana is supposed to be from? Her name is Alana Verdansky.
What? Verdansky?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that one's tough. Because now I'm thinking like Eastern Europe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Eastern Europe, or it's like one of the Balkans area.
Yeah, like okay, what's around there? Turkey. I'm gonna say Turkey.
Ooh. She could be a Turk. I mean, if this all is the question that I need to answer now that Neil's picked a very good one is, how racist do I want to be just by assuming that skin color has anything to do with where she's from?
Well, I mean, this accent is
alone. Before I asked you about Verdansky, where did you think she was from?
Where did I think she was from?
Yeah.
Like a South America almost.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I always thought she was Russian, because, and especially, I mean, later she will be in possession of a Russian language novel. So I always thought Alana Verdansky was Russian, but according to Lostpedia, I just feel like Lostpedia is throwing shade here. It says, however, her accent is not Russian. It sure isn't. And her name, Alana, is a very common Israeli forename. Her accent is a fair approximation of an Israeli accent. And there are many Israelis with a Russian ancestry. So,
Israeli. Interesting.
Israeli makes sense, too.
Okay, yeah. So let's follow up. The actress is Zuleika Robinson, no relation. So where do you think Zuleika Robinson is from?
I'm going to stick with, like, well, I think she's from America, but I think she's, like, American, like, South America, South. I'm gonna claim her for the Latinos.
The Latinos, okay.
Mm.
Zuleika is spelled Z-U-L-E-I-K-H-A. You can change your answer now that you know how that's spelled if you like to. Not that it's wrong, I'm just saying. I don't know a lot of Latina names that have a K-H-A in them, but.
God.
I know too many people of multiple races all named Nevaeh to even think that makes a difference, so I'm gonna stick with it.
I think I'm going to stick I'm going to stick with the Eastern European. I just don't know what country. I'm sorry. But not obviously not Russia. Somewhere in between France and Russia.
She was born in London.
Damn it.
She was brought up in Thailand, Singapore, and Malaysia by an Indian Burmese mother and an English father. So.
Oh.
Wow.
That's our most complicated accent corner yet.
I have the right latitude.
None of those are Russian.
Is Alana Russian or Israeli? And is Zuleika Robinson, I guess, British Burmese?
All right.
So, you know, sort of doing so. There you go.
Cool. Lost waited until season 5 to give us the most complicated accent corner situation possible.
It's like. That accent corner was like 30 years ago.
I married her. Coincidence corner. It's got to be baby Ethan. Just like baby randomly, Ethan. Ethan's back. Ethan, the character who I think has come back like the most. Maybe, okay, like it depends what you mean by come back. But just like every once in a while, you're like, we're obviously done with Ethan. He died in season 1. Nope. Ethan's back. Guess I'm out of the book club. Joanna, what do we want to say about Sawyer and Winston Churchill?
I mean, we don't have a book here because Sawyer insists on reading books in the 1970s that have like a nondescript cover.
Yeah, or holding them flat so you can't see them in screen caps. It's very annoying, Josh Holloway.
But I just love this moment where he's just like enjoying a quiet book in his home and Jack comes in and tries to like peacock him and he's like, listen, buddy, if it's good enough for Winston Churchill, it's good enough for me. I just love Jim LaFleur. Like, Jim LaFleur is the best guy. When Jim LaFleur is like, don't worry, I got your back, he does. He will come up with a plan. You might fuck that plan up, but Jim LaFleur is going to come up with a plan for you. So, yeah.
It's time for the Saeed Jarrah reverse button watch. It's back, but he has not buttoned any purple buttons. It is all the way open. He's got that deep U tank top. It's very good. We're fine. Don't worry about it, Saeed.
Yeah. I mean, and he doesn't need to be in a hurry to button it up or anything either.
Yeah. We have a new corner this week. It's the Jeff Jensen Recap Nickname Award. Joanna's been leading a lot of recaps of the time. Contemporary Lost recaps. And apparently Jeff Jensen in the Television Without Pity tradition is good at coming up with those recap nicknames. What do we got this week?
It was just the thing that was done at the time. It's just a style that has left us and now just sort of sticks out. Anyway, instead of repeating the character name, you just come up with like some sort of zippy nickname for them, a la Sawyer. So this week, I'm going to give the award to Jeff Jensen calling Christian Shepherd the Poltergeisty Pop. That is nice. Jack Shepherd's Poltergeisty Pop. Christian Shepherd.
So many siblings. Ben's talking, so it's obviously a lie award. Actually goes to Saeed. Ironic. Who says, we do not refer to ourselves as hostile, but yes, I am one of them. Which is also like a double blind, because that's what he's supposed to be saying. But I do like giving Saeed a Ben award, because it would really piss him off.
It would. He would be very mad.
Oh, woo-loo-loo! It's the best time travel moment. It's a little baby Ben. You thought he was just a one-off to tell a Ben Linus backstory. No, he's a recurring character. Love that little kid and his thick glasses. I hope nothing bad happens to him. Jungle of Kistery moment. We did not have one last week because LaFleur's Kistery was canceled on request of Joanna Robinson, who could not believe that anybody would possibly be able to beat Sawyer and Juliet. Neil said, perhaps Richard and James. Mm-hmm. But we'll never know the truth because there was no actual poll. So I can't cave to democracy here. We'll just have to continue to debate that. This week, though, people can be kissing. Joanna, who are our nominees?
Well, we should say that we had two time polls in place of Kistery that ran on our Twitter. The most 1974 thing and the most 1977 thing. There was a little time typo on that, but that's okay. So Juliet's peasant blouse, it's a purple paisley number, you may recall, won the 1977, that would be 77, yeah. The 1977, you know what? I'm a little confused about everything that's going on here. Anyway, I'll just say this. The two winners were Juliet's peasant blouse and Paul's Ankh necklace. So the Ankh and the, it's a lot of fashion is what we're interested in here. And that was true of when this used to be the most 2004 thing. It was a lot of like lime green, whatever Shannon was wearing, like sort of stuff. So fashion, it appears, is the thing we most identify with at the time. And we're going to bring that back today. But for Kistery, for Namaste, here are four options for you. We've got Saeed and Sawyer, submitted by our listener Ira. So there was that interrogation scene. We've got Jin and Saeed. You know, they do some close talking before stupid Brzezinski shows up and spoils the mood out in the fields there. We've got Sun's paddle and Ben's head. I got to say, anytime something's hitting Ben, that's usually a pretty popular entry in the Kistery poll. So the kiss of the oar and Ben's old noggin there. And then lastly, we've got the roommate bros, Hurley and Sawyer, and their hugstery. So vote over on at Storm Podcast. Oh yeah, our listener Claire is the one who submitted Jin and Saeed. So you can vote on those over at Storm Podcast on Twitter. And then we also have we're keeping the most 1977 thing as a recurring thing. And this week we've decided that it is Jack's tight Don Draper dark blue polo shirt. We have decided it is Jack's best look he ever has on this show. Is his, you know, I will add, I think the lay that he gets when he gets to the barracks just adds to the look. Kate right. is a close second with her braid, but both of them look incredible. 1977 looks well on Jack and Kate.
The Charlie Pace Memorial Final Words Award goes to the co-pilot and says, come on, but just doesn't know that Frank Lapidus is going to land that plane.
I think he's more like, come on!
Come on!
And then he gets impaled by a tree.
Yikes. The Frank Lapidus Guess We're Not Going to Guam Act Break Award goes to I Lied, Sun, after knocking Ben out, because Frank was like, I thought you trusted this guy. Dark Sun, don't trust anybody. She's going to oar anybody to the face that crosses her. I'm looking forward to more oarings. Apparently runner-up Baby Ben, but I'm going to say it's going to be difficult for a show button to win an act break award. I think by definition that's not an act break. Because otherwise it would always be that, right? The thing right before it says lost? I don't know.
Oh, we'll right at the end? Yeah.
We'll give a silver medal here because they're made up.
It's good.
Lost closes hard at every break.
Yeah, lost clothes is real hard.
So you're saying, nice to meet you, Ben. It's like really good.
It's time for the official podcast check-in. I'm going to warn you guys for the upcoming weeks. The podcast kind of stops taking listener questions for a few weeks, so I'm not going to have some official podcast check-ins for the next couple of episodes just because it's them doing like PR about this contest that was happening where they were letting people name this season's secret scene, quote unquote. So they say, you know, each season has a secret scene. They called the opening of the hatch the bagel, I believe. The season two ending was the hollow bread. The flash forward at the end of season three was the rattlesnake in the mailbox. And the frozen donkey wheel at the end of season four was called the frozen donkey wheel. But it actually ended up being the frozen donkey wheel scene was lock in a box. So this season, they're like, make up something for this episode's finale, and they have a few promotional episodes to do that. Don't worry about it. Let's do a podcast check-in. I will be reading Carlton Cuse, Neil will be reading, and Damon Lindelof. Here we go. This is from Robert in Sumner, Washington, who says, I've listened to every podcast you've ever done, and I've never had a question of mine read. This is a big one, and it would mean the world to me if you guys could talk about it. So when Walt tells Locke that he saw him in a dream, that he was in a suit, that there were people that wanted to hurt him, is that what's happening right now? Are Ajira people going to hurt him, or is that something that's going to go on in season 6? And thanks, love every second of the show, and we'll look forward to an expose spinoff.
I think that these are interesting theories, but all we'll say is this, that when Locke is in a suit, and he's in a suit in two basic phases of his life and death. One is he's in a suit in a coffin. It doesn't seem like anyone's trying to hurt him. But one could make the argument that that by bringing him back, that would be hurtful. So is Walt talking about the Oceanic Six? Or once he's back alive, is he talking about the Ajira folks? I think those are two possibilities we should be considering. So you're barking up the right tree.
So continue to bark.
What was the other question?
They were looking forward to an expose spinoff.
Oh, I think that we're actually talking about an expose animated spinoff called Expose Babies. sort of like the Muppet
expose
Babies.
Expose Babies.
Making the dreams come true. Unless there are crazy monster spiders.
Really quickly before we go, I just want to mention that, of course, I forgot about three very important people who are missing. And that is, of course, Bernard, Rose, and Vincent. So Shout out to Bernard, Rose, and Vincent. Where are they? Hopefully together.
Wherefore are that? Maybe they just didn't skip. Yeah, maybe they didn't skip. Maybe they're fine. They're fine. They're
hey
not.
Guys,
they're not on Hydra Island. They're in the future in 2022, and we'll talk about Lost 2 in the storm right after this.
Guys, I heard some good news today.
Yeah.
And that is that there might be vaccines in our arms sooner than we thought. But what that means is that we have to start thinking about reintegrating ourselves into society. Which means maybe we want to get our mental health ducks in a row before we have to do that. So I just want to know, is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals of, say, acting like a socially adept person? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. And the service is available for clients worldwide.
That means you could log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you could schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy, even if you're vaccinated and for some reason you could do that. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
You can visit their website and you can read testimonials that are posted daily, including this one for a counselor named Candace. This reviewer says that Candace was professional, considerate, helpful all the way, practical tools for dealing with stressful situations and people, great talk therapy, exclamation point. And because this podcast episode is sponsored by BetterHelp, Storm listeners get 10% off their first month. All you're going to do is you're going to visit betterhelp.com/storm. That's betterhelp.com/storm and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. That website again is betterhelp.com/storm. Get 10% off your first month.
Now is the time on the podcast, of course, where we like to thank our Patreon subscribers at the $10 level or above. They get everything, all the things. So thank you to Laura E., Dharma Jess, Ali Medeiros, Lawrence Aggleton, Connor Muffish, Amy H., Debbie Denise, Randy Elaine, Rich Lyman, Moira Burke, Rachel Matusik, J. Jeff Cooper, Alicia Gressler, Elliot Goldbaum, Darth Fischius, Monica Rickman, Tanya Shroom, Dennis Ramirez, Alyssa Scott, and Quang Yu Yu. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to add to that, thanks, Jewel Bailey, Liz Major, Brian Morawski, Randy Blash, Brittany Whimsy Riot, Sam Cohen, Kate Whitney, Amber Vickers, Patricia Delani, Carrie King, Anissa Ford, Erland Holbeck, Jeff Cooper, Angela Flunker, Christopher Holmquist, Marissa Zane, Ben Brown, Otto Nim, Carol Blaine, and Christopher Woodside. Thank you, guys.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Natalie Smith, Ruby Durham, Lauren Bree, Christopher Bates, Steph Deal, Aubrey Iyer, Elise Abschutz, Josh Brown, Victoria Stout, Kathy Schaberg, Lindsay Romaine, Grace Brown, A. Will, Ellen Rabin, Katie Truchant, Liz Roller, Billy Bosky, James Cooper, John Lillystrom, and Samantha O'Leary. Thank you all for being members of the Small Council.
And you are here in the storm. You made it past all of the sounds. I'm yelling at you again. That's how you know where you are. It's in the storm where the spoilers are.
A lot of energy, okay? In the storm.
Yeah, we're good. This is where the energy is. This is the crackling lightning is charging our mind clouds here in the storm. I like it. We're all winning. I have a minor question that might be just sort of more about where we're like drawing a line. Joanna, it seemed like you were a little mad about my response about Faraday.
spoiler.
Well, but I guess I apologize, but also, like, you were like, also, we're not seeing any more of Juliet and Sawyer. Also, we're not seeing any more of Brzezinski. So I feel like, are we balancing a seesaw, or does one of us have to change behavior?
I don't know how to answer that question.
I am all in favor of everything that happened in the calm, by the way. I'm just wondering, because I was not expecting my... Faraday's off the island to be a spoiler, but I apologize.
Oh yeah, I guess we don't really know that Faraday's off the island yet. It's sort of, for the Calmies at least, a mystery.
Yes, I just thought the assumption would be easy, but you're right, he could also be dead.
This is one thing I was thinking about along those lines as we were talking about this, is I couldn't remember if in that initial flashback in the cold open of the season, can we tell it's the swan that they're building?
You can kind of assume it if you want to, but that still doesn't place it necessarily in time yet.
Well, this episode shows Radzinski modeling the swan.
Yeah, but it's also already being built.
Oh, I guess that's true.
The storm reason that I also didn't want to do a whole bunch of official podcast check-ins is because this week that like the finale is called The Incident. Oh, where have we heard that name before? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, we don't need to do this.
Here's why I think the Faraday, and like a point taken about me saying stuff about James and Juliet and the fact that we don't get a Radzinski-centric episode.
I mean, that's good news. We don't have to watch Radzinski end his life.
I'm not against setting people's expectations correctly. I guess I'm wondering where... As we get further in the calm, where the lie line is supposed to be.
And that's a fair question. I think why I'm touchy around the Faraday thing is because I think they're trying to make the audience wonder if he's dead. The way that Sawyer says it, he's like, oh, he used to be, but he's not here anymore. So you're like, what? Is Faraday dead? Did he die? And then he shows up. He like walks off the sub from Ann Arbor and you're like, oh, he's alive. And then he dies really quickly thereafter. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's the sort of like roller coaster of emotion I was kind of trying to like prime the listeners for. I'm not mad about it. It's not a major spoiler. He's in Ann Arbor. It's fine.
I heard your voice, your response, and wanted to check with you. And I feel this is a storm topic. Because we're gonna have to be doing some lying, like basically like I've been saying everything with Locke this season I'm going to be aggressively lying about in the calm, and that's just the way it is for showmanship, but that's fine. I think people will enjoy the series that way. All right, are we in an alternate future at the Dharma Barracks?
No, I don't think so.
No.
But that's, isn't that weird? I don't know. I've never.
Yeah. I mean, it also could just be a building where they had like stuff stored. I don't know. Did they?
But the question is like, did Ben. There.
Yeah, the welcome signs. I guess just there for TV reasons.
Yeah. Right,
to place it.
It's so that we know it's the same spot.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I get why it's there, but it just, it causes a little continuity issue. That's fine.
Yeah. Because they're definitely in 2007 and yeah. in the post. I forget what it's further into the future, right? It's like a little while after.
Further in the future from.
Further in the future than when they left the island, which was, yeah, so it's like, yeah, 3 years since left the island.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't know quite yet what happened on the island in those three, in the main time, right?
Yeah, which is one of the holes presented that Lost 2 could fill in. That's the fun idea. To go back to the very beginning of the podcast, that's the fun idea of like Lost 2, and I think everybody's in the storm will know this even more, which is, like, there are all these holes in the island's history, in the character's history, specific characters that sort of fall out the face of the earth. Lady Dharma Judge from season 3, I'm looking at you. I'm sorry, other judge. That you could jump back in terms of how serialized storytelling works with flashbacks. You know, you could have your own WandaVision recap episode in Lost 2 and jump back to how the welcome sign got in the Dharma Initiative, which isn't...
you find out that it was... Oh, who would it have been all along? Colleen? No,
Claire?
Claire. Yeah, it was Claire all along.
She went back to get some stuff out of her exploded house where she had that vision of Christian, but was cut out of the episode. Yeah, I think like that sort of stuff's fun. The reason I always say you should do it at the end of a first season is because not only would you get a whole bunch of new viewers just because it's a surprise, but because what I'm describing, making a TV show for just that reason is a bad idea. That's how we get bad nostalgia-themed TV show. Or it's like, you know, that's them thinking that we have to know how Han Solo got his gun in Solo, and it's like, a guy gave it to him. It's like, I guessed a guy had given it to him. Like, that's the sort of, like, bad storytelling that we want to avoid. But I think if you lean into Lost after you've already established who your characters are, that's essentially what Lost did anyway in its first season. You just don't want to let people know it's a crazy mythology mystery show that Matthew Fox might show up on until the end of the first season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the theory of what a good Lost sequel would be. It's a show that in its first season would make you care about the characters enough that what you would stay with the show if it nothing, you know, if it was a completely separate thing and didn't connect to your main Lost story anyway, people would still want to watch it because your new characters are so good. And
yeah.
then you start throwing in stuff. I mean, the island obviously is the star of this whole thing. So
yeah, definitely. And then also the idea sort of like, if you're going to have a big idea of Lost, the reason I don't like the idea of a reboot, because I think a reboot would have to eventually circle to be like all of Lost. So either it does flash sideways, or the thing about the reboot is it doesn't do flash sideways. Much like the new Stephen King Stand television adaptation, which like the thing it did different is had a new ending and told the story out of order. So it's like part of the marketing needs to be involved in the the actual making of the show. But I think it's very doable.
I think I also have one other really good idea, but I am definitely not saying it on a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. All of these ideas are just given away for free.
It's one where I wrote it down and I'm like, yeah, Disney's going to have to call for this one.
All right. We have a Noel Murray quote here that we are going to discuss. I'm going to pass off to Joanna.
In reading Noel's recap, Noel was our guest last week, and he wrote the AV Club recaps, and like, I'm not here to like shame anyone for having wrong instincts. I just like how exactly wrong his instincts are here. But he was talking about an interview that Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof gave right around the time this episode came out, where they talked about some of the mysteries that the audiences were interested in, they weren't all that interested in. So like, no, we're not going to go back and explore every single thing that you guys are clamoring for, because we're not all that interested in it. And so Noel was talking about like Libby, and he says, I for one hope that Dalton don't leave Libby hanging. They do. But do we really need, say, a Black Rock flashback? Given how the Rousseau flashback turned out to be a big chunk of rehash, I'm wondering maybe we don't already know just about all we need to do with some of this island mythology. Save the rest of the prequel novels and video games. So first of all, we're going to get so much island mythology, obviously.
Second of all, where are my prequel novels and video games?
But also the Black Rock is a great example because like, no, I don't like, do I need the Black Rock by itself? No. Do I need the Black Rock as nested into Richard's episode, which mm-hmm. is an episode I love? Yes. It's a perfect, perfect way to get into the Black Rock in a way that is, feels interesting and relevant to the final season. So Lost does not always nail it, but I think they really nailed it with how they did the Black Rock, you know, contrary to what Noel was fearing. So there you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, tough break for Libby, though.
Yeah. Rough, rough stuff. Where is Libby? Not okay. Of interest to Carlton and Damon.
Nope. She, even though she touched all the Daves and it's right there on the periphery. Libby's your way to all the Daves, man.
I mean, that's the true Lost sequel. It's Libby. It's somebody going back in time to save Libby and the Daves.
Yeah. Speaking of time, it's time to talk about the Smoke Monster timeline. Our omnipresent Smoke Monster that can take corporeal form. What questions do we have about where he's going, where he's been?
I guess this is...
So he's still using Christian's body because he hasn't yet picked up John's body. Is
correct. Because, yeah, that when we were at the beginning of the calm section trying to put the days back together, mm-hmm. that's because this is the old form, and then he jumps into the new John Locke form. The new magical yeah. John Locke form.
I guess what I didn't realize until we were talking about it in the calm was that, of course, the monster would still be chilling around the Dharma barracks because Ben turned off all the fencing, you know, before he left the island.
Oh, so he's like, I never get to hang out here.
Yeah. So now he's like, oh, I'm going to hang out here.
Maybe. Or do you think it's like they were... In the last 3 years, the Smoke Monster decorated the barracks with all that Dharma stuff. And he's like, a dilapidated namaste sign.
I mean, now, isn't...
photos.
Is it who broke the ash line around Jacob's cabin also like one of those like Lost Two things that's never answered? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Well, here's the question about Smokey. Do you think that like Smokey was on the way to Hydra Island to become John Locke and just happened to see Sun and was like, all right, well, I guess I can help out Sun. I can throw Sun, a small token of information.
Is he or, helping? What is he doing?
I mean, he's just there to tell Sun that Jin is in a different time.
Right, but why? It's manipulating.
That's the question. Right. Like, is it just like one of those on the way things? or was this premeditated? We're going to just mess with Sun and Jin as much as possible. Which
Let's take the Christian tracks. Shepherd skin suit for one last whirl. One last party with Christian Shepherd. I mean, right? I know it's not an actual skin suit. I know it's not corporeal. Please don't at me. Yeah, I don't know.
It's, because then after wild. Doing this, immediately leaves and goes and becomes John Locke.
Do you think the time, I mean, because like a lot of the recaps at the time were really grokking onto this idea of Christian Shepherd as the physical manifestation of the Smoke Monster. I think this episode with its close proximity of like clickety clacks and good old Christian showing up really tipped the hand. Also, one of the Lost Addicts blog has a screen cap where you can like see some smoke outside the door where Christian's standing. So oh, wow. Anyway, so do you think they sort of like jumbled up the timeline here so that it would just be a little bit more confusing about they could keep the secret of the Smoke Monster as John hidden? Because say you're a theorizer and you're like, well, I think it's Christian. And then you're like, but then you're not expecting it to be John because you like feel like you've finally solved the question, and it's Christian, is the Smoke Monster. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good misdirection because the John thing, and this I think is one of the reasons why we've been so careful with it in the calm, is it really does kind of sneak up on you. in that finale. And it's a really good sort of twist. So, yeah, I mean, this feels like textbook, a little bit of diversion.
Yeah, I think they drop monster. Two diversionary hints. There's this one, and then doesn't Ben meet Alex in the monster's lair? And that's sort of like the hint that, like, oh, the monster could definitely turn into people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not until, I think it's not until Jacob dies that the smoke monster is locked into John's body. For whatever esoteric island mythological reasons.
Well, he found the loophole.
Yeah, once Jacob's dead, then he's killable, right?
Yeah, that's what makes him.
Some
Quark stuff to do. Okay.
This is how the man in black believes that he can get off the island is in John's body. There's more to them making him killable, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But I think maybe if he's doing anything here, it's because doesn't John then roll up on Lapidus and son still in Dharmaville eventually? So I think it's just like putting them somewhere and giving them a mystery to chew on so you can come back and collect them on Team Smoke.
Well, yeah, because they all end up on Ben's little quest to, or they sort of, before Ben goes to get judged, right? That's a whole nother thing for this season.
Yeah, Ben gets judged and then he's like, take me to Jacob. I'm going to kill him. Da 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 da. And Dave has a fun episode talking about how much we like killing God, which, you know, that's not an antagonist move in the storm or really in life. I don't think it's like, shoot your shot. If it's going to be a God, that's between you and God, I think.
Did you guys read Jen Chaney's oral history of the Lost Finale?
Well, I haven't read the whole thing yet.
Okay, so maybe we'll hold off discussing it until you guys read it, but we should probably talk about it in the storm. But in case you're listening to this podcast and you didn't already know, former friend of the pod, former guest, Jen Chaney over at Vulture, wrote an oral history, a very extensive, beautiful oral history called No, They Weren't Dead the Whole Time, an oral history of Lost, Daring, Divisive Finale, our last truly communal broadcast TV experience. And she has been working on this so long. Because I remember talking to Damon at the end of season 3, he said he had just talked to Jen for this. So that's how long Jen has been working on this oral history. So it's really great. I suggest you read it. she wrote a tweet, I think, about the people that she couldn't get in contact with. And one of them is like Matthew Fox, where she's just like, couldn't locate him, tried in desperation his brother, couldn't find him. So, you know, but it's a very, otherwise a very, very complete, beautiful story. So you should check it out. We'll read it and we'll discuss it eventually, in the storm section here. I just wanted to bring it up in case folks hadn't checked that yet.
Nice. Do we have any emails this week for the storm section?
We have a few. A lot of them are tied to this question of like why only certain people are skipping through time. So I'll just read a couple. Mm. Let's start with Rachel. Rachel wrote, first I want to say that Rachel wrote in her email that, but why does it have four toes became shorthand that my mother and I used when debating Lost theories. Whenever we start wildly questioning everything and need to take a break, one of us yell, but why does it have four toes? that's like in the WandaVision podcast I'm doing with, Richard Lawson and Anthony Breskin, I'm fond of saying like sometimes a drone is just a drone as a way to just sort of like let the air out of the tires on certain things. Sometimes, you know, sometimes a drone is just a drone. It's fine. All right. But Rachel wrote, I want to write in my thoughts on why our Lossy seems to be the only one skipping through time. Bear in mind that I haven't watched ahead of where you guys are on the series, so I'm working off pure decades old recollection. Doesn't it have something to do with the temple? I thought that's why Ben sent all the remaining other there before he went to the donkey wheel. Doesn't the temple protect them from Smokey and from time shenanigans? I could be very wrong about this. I would say to this, like, we see Richard talking to John. I mean, Richard might be an exemption, but like, no, we see others sort of like crouching as the sky goes funny. And they're not at the temple when that happens. I'm pretty sure. What do you guys think?
No, I can remember the shot you're talking about where it's like John in his all in his glory as finally as the leader of the others as it's being the island's being flashed away. I think it's possible that their association with the temple, because the temple stuff gets weird, especially in this season where we start to learn where it's like, I don't know if you've been dunked in the water in the temple. That's a, now you're a little bit different because we see the Ben thing. I mean, we don't see the water thing yet, but we know that something can be done to you in the temple by the end of this season that makes you a little different. I just don't know if that applies to all the other others. It's not very well fleshed out.
It's not great. all right, this theory comes from Derek. Derek says, Derek says that this is the most interesting thing on Lost to him. The reason I love this mystery is that it is something that is never directly answered by the show, but a question that viewers can figure out given context clues. As you mentioned, it seemed to be the candidates that time travel, but what exactly is a candidate? Like you mentioned, a lot of island magic gets attributed to Jacob and Smokey when they are just kind of arbiters for it. Jacob's list of candidates seems to be a list he has comprised of people that have a special connection to the island, Force-sensitive, as he once... Oh, I'm the one who came up with that. Great. Force-sensitive, as he once called them. However, Jacob... However, I only say that because I just don't want to talk about midichlorians. That's fine. We're talking about Force-sensitive. However, Jacob only will choose one of those Force-sensitives, or maybe we should call them island-sensitives, as a potential candidate if he thinks that individual is broken. That's why some people, such as Rose, Bernard, Miles, and famously Kate, get removed as potential candidates. While then neither Ben nor Claire time travel, the names Linus and Littleton appear on the wall, probably because Roger Workman or Alex and the wee baby Aaron are candidates. Presumably Aaron had his name crossed out when Kate had hers crossed out. Anyway, that explanation has just always made sense to me. Do you all agree? I have more theories about how electromagnetism and the bomb reset time on the island, but those are best saved for another day. Keep up all the amazing work I love listening to every week. Never tighten up. Derek, P.S. I often listen to this while opening at work, and I'm pretty sure my coworker saw me almost cry when listening to the Chris, a.k.a. the lesbian LaFleur love story. So I just love that. All right. So island sensitive candidates are the only ones traveling through time. Dave.
I love it. The name Quan being on the rock wall. Does that mean it's only one?
We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about the, this was a thing that I almost spoiled in the calm. Couple episodes back, which is I think it has to have something to do with them being candidates. Although the Kate one is interesting because Kate travels through time, right? And she's crossed off.
But she doesn't do the hopping. I think we're talking mostly about the like hop. I think it's not okay. Who gets snapped out of the plane. It's like who when we're hopping through time
those are the two things I'm trying to reconcile.
Yeah.
There's the group of people that we're skipping, which I think are all candidates. And then there's the group of people that got zapped back in time, which have to be connected somehow to this, right? There has to be some reason why it's Kate, Hurley, Jack, and Saeed and not Sun.
To keep the Sun and Jin separated. Until when? Next season, right?
Yeah, I mean, we know it's easy to figure why Ben didn't get flashed back in time because... he's already back in that time and he's not one of the survivors of Flight 815. And he's not, is he a candidate, Ben? Or he was crossed off a long time ago, sort of deal.
Linus is on the wall, but, as Derek said in his email, that could be Roger.
Right.
Roger
right.
Workman.
Yeah. Or like I said, Ben could have been canceled when he wiped out, the Dharma Initiative. That's a pretty big crime, even on the island.
But I don't understand. Is it someone who has, like, do you, okay, here's another question. Please send in your storm emails about this. What gets you crossed off the wall?
Right.
Is it, your life is actually fulfilling, so, you shouldn't come be a guardian of a weird island, a la Kate? Mm-hmm. Or, is it that you've done something so egregious that it disqualifies you as a candidate? So evil.
Which because could be like, Ben.
So like he wants you broken, but not so broken that you commit a dharmacide. Is that what you're saying? Is that where the line is?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's how you end up on Hurley.
But Hurley seems, well, Hurley seems fine.
Well, he was broken and traumatized by everything that happened around him winning the lottery. And also can talk to ghosts now. So that's pretty broken from, I would say, the normal human experience.
Yeah. I also don't think Jacob's too pissed about the Purge.
Yeah, I mean, Purge might have been his idea. Ben's going to blame him anyway, so.
I also just think that it's, I need to get out my, like, lost PDF book that has, like, a whole two pages on the cave and the crossed out names. Also, I'm just, like, not confident they thought every single thing through. and they didn't know that, like, a decade later we'd still be talking about which names are crossed off on the cave wall and why.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this about the idea of the candidates. I love the idea of the candidates and the idea that the island chooses people. But what gets me is this idea that it's Jacob doing it, right? Because Jacob's the one crossing off all the names.
And like doing interpreting?
All the, keeping all the lists. And when we finally find out that Jacob is just like a shitty god, like he's just a dude that lives in a statue. I don't know. I'm less impressed. I'm more impressed if it's just like the island draws people and the island tests people. And then he, you know, they who survive the island's tests get to, you know, enjoy the healing powers of the island. That would have been potentially better.
I mean, Godspeed's on the wall at one point. So at one point, he's considering Horus,
right? Or Ethan, if that was Ethan's original last name.
I have questions about Ethan's last name too. Yeah, but Claire's on there, and does Claire get crossed off because she loses her marbles? I don't know what to tell you.
Or but is like it that, Aaron? And Aaron gets crossed off because Kate leaves him. I like that one. That was a fun one from the email.
There's like a bunch going on, but I think what most matters is that the final, six candidates, Locke, Reyes, Ford, Gerard, Shepard, Quan, are not crossed off, and they have numbers, and they have some of the numbers next to their name, 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42. So, I don't know, man. The candidates.
Those were your island idol. Final candidates.
Text your vote.
It was the numbers. Oh, speaking of the numbers, I could have mentioned this in the column, but I love that you can hear the numbers broadcast as the plane is crashing, as the Ajira 316 is crashing. I didn't notice it until I watched it today with my headphones on, but as Frank and the co-pilot are like radioing out, you can hear the numbers being read from the radio tower. It's pretty great.
Numbers.
Yep. Always there.
Yep. Also not explained. Lost 2 really should get into those numbers.
The whole thing's just going to be about the numbers.
Just be about the numbers. Episode 4 is going to be our first big episode. And then, you know, the huge gap between the 20s, 40s, and then 108. All right. I think that does it, unless we have other Storm emails.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, honestly, we didn't have a ton and you know, a lot of time jumping stuff. So thank you all for writing in. We're not going to tighten up too much, but you know, I will try to be a little bit more efficient with emails. Anything else Stormy we want to talk about? I'm really excited for I watched ahead a little bit, and I just really love the Baby Ben Saeed stuff that's in next week's episode.
Oh yep, gotta disable that Slack bot.
I will, you know I will.
Oh yeah, no, it's just, or don't, and then it's just funny.
This one would kill the Slack bot.
I'm for the chaos magic.
Saeed is so good.
I mean, Saeed like and Alana have their like, no, he unzips a boot. We need the Slack bot disabled. For those of you who are listening, if you don't know, in our Patreon Slack, every time you type the word Saeed, a bot says he's very good. And that's based, of course, on one of our listeners. So, and their mom. So we try to disable it when it's a Saeed episode. I don't know what other Stormy stuff I have to say.
I think that's good. We got stuff coming up. Yeah. We talked about candidates.
This is a good episode. The incident is coming.
Yeah. We talked about candidates. We talked about the smoke monster. This is what the storm's going to be going forward, guys.
I do think it's interesting that, this episode, is very good. I really like this episode. But it's Jack Bender and it's Brian K. Vaughan, right? Like really starry. But I still think LaFleur is better. You know? I think I think LaFleur is just it's still better.
Well, LaFleur is a full, like a full story that
yeah, but it's like at the time, like reading the recaps at the time, and I'm reading a big chunk of them every week. Like that was not the common. Like LaFleur is just, I think, grown in our estimation. Perhaps the death of Juliet and also the vending machine moment. Sort of like retroactively confers all this.
They close hard on the Juliet and Sawyer thing for sure.
So yeah,
after Kate murders her, see previous storms. All right. Neil, where are we going next week? Again, we've been talking about it, but remind us.
Oh, well, we're going to freak out the Calmies in the beginning of the episode He's Our You, which is a Saeed episode in which they tell Saeed he's about to go get tortured by a torture guy. But it's weirder than that, so we'll just leave it there for now.
It's great.
Until next week's Saeed making big choices, where can people find more of your work online, Neil?
Oh, you can get me over at thefilmschoolrejects.com. You can get me on Twitter at Rejects or at One Perfect Shot, where all month in March we are doing our giant monster bracket, where we're going to figure out who the greatest giant monster in cinematic history is. I can't wait to see how that goes. And if you're a member of our Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers, we are finishing up Pushing Daisies in my Stream Together Watch Alone channel.
Already?
Yeah, by the end of this week, we'll be done with Pushing Daisies and thinking about what we're going to do next. So stay tuned.
Ooh-wee. Joanna Robinson.
Oh, find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. We are wrapping up WandaVision this week. Speaking of wrapping up romances. So yeah, still watching WandaVision. Check it out. VanityFair.com. Check it out. That's where you'll find me.
And you can find me on Twitter at DA7E and also on the Fighting in the War Room podcast and right here every week at the end of this show telling you to not fall down.